Rewind is an award-winning insider's look at Wisconsin politics and public policy. Brought to you by Wisconsin Eye and wispolitics.com. To become a program sponsor, please send an email to rewind@wisi.org.
I believe united we stand, and we have common ground to find, and we're going to find it. We're not even going to be
I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind for a very busy week in the Capitol. But let's start with Wisi was there. You have, first, a very interesting experiment that cut the number of emergency room visits from 270 to 7. Then you have the frustrations of a woman who says, I have disabilities. I've applied for hundreds of jobs. I decided to start my own business. And finally, the Wisconsin Assembly welcomed Jamie Kloss. It was great to see her as a hometown hero. Wish I was there.
We're calling it our My Connections, and I'm not going to call it a pilot anymore. I'm going to call it a program because we're at our 9 months mark. Right now it's 11 people. We're paying for their rent, and the outcomes are, I couldn't even believe them. 6 months before these 11 individuals, they had 270 visits to the ER. They now had 7. They had 70 inpatient stays. They had 21 over the last 6 months.
We need to treat individuals with disabilities like everyone else. I applied to 300 law firms. They all looked at, when they learned about my disability, wouldn't employ me. But after 300 people saying no, I decided I was hiring me. I have a letter stating from a disability, my disability counselor stating that opening my own was a waste of time, a waste of taxpayer money, and was honestly the worst thing I could possibly do. I've been open going on 12 years now. Vanderbilt Law Office has always made a profit.
No one is saying they want the CNAs to have less knowledge, less responsibility, less credits. Instead, what they are saying is, I'm worried. These people are working with my mom, dad, brother, grandfather, sister, husband, wife, and there aren't enough of them. I'm really worried about their care. There's constant turnover because we're not paying people enough.
When we put ourselves on a track of spending more money, that means that we have to tax. And we need to be attractive as a state in order to attract that labor force. And one of the ways we're going to do that, Mr. Speaker, is to make sure we protect our residents from undue excessive taxation.
On October 15th of last year, tragedy struck my community of Barron. That morning, two innocent people were murdered and a young girl taken. After 88 days in captivity, that young lady found her way to freedom. On behalf of the state of Wisconsin, I am so proud to present our Hometown Hero Award to Miss Jamie Kloss.
On Wednesday, our state Supreme Court heard the challenge to the lame duck bills and the appointments made in December. So you had all seven justices there. The arguments ran, I don't know, about 100 and, hour 10 minutes, hour and 15. Mm-hmm. I thought it was very interesting. At issue here is the not only the legality of the December, but all the extraordinary session bills, appointments, and labor contracts ratified going back to the 1980s. Your general impressions before we hear some audio of that argument?
Some deep skepticism from three conservative justices, Rebecca Bradley, Daniel Kelly,
Chief
Rogensack.
Yes.
Seemed like you can kind of, I mean, it's always, you should be cautious to predict things off oral arguments because you can play devil's advocate. But it's at one point, you know, Justice Rogensack was asking a question of one of the attorneys for the labor and said, you know, he's like, I'm sorry, I don't really understand where you're at. And she basically said, that's funny, I don't understand where you're at either.
That's right.
So that seemed to suggest that there is a little bit of a, I don't know, a question that they have.
Yeah.
I mean, let's be honest, the justices run nonpartisan races, but we kind of know what their politics are. There is a sense, some of the people I talked to, the court, because of the conservative majority, will come down on the side of the Republican lawmakers. Now, that might be the correct ruling of law. Right? I'm not going to say it's not, but they're likely going to rule, at least people I talk to, rule that the lawmakers were correct in meeting an extraordinary session. They have that power. They can set their terms, and that everything was good to go.
Yeah, there was certainly that signal. I expect a ruling by July 1, don't you? If not sooner?
Possibly, you know, if they're going to move quickly. Don't forget there's a second case that they're dealing with, too. I mean, that one to me is more interesting because of separation of powers issue. This seems to be a what's the legislature's purview about what it can do and when.
Yes.
And they seem hesitant to the conservatives to mess with the separation of powers and dictating to another branch of government what it can do and when.
Yeah, so it's time to hear some video from that argument, and especially the minute that Jeff Mandel for the League of Women Voters stood up, he said, I want to introduce the people, the plaintiffs in this case, and then listen to how Justice Rebecca Gressel Bradley interrupted him. Please.
Sometimes new needs do arise. You know, sometimes the Milwaukee Bucks threaten to leave town, and the legislature has got to come back in and fund and authorize an arena so the Milwaukee Bucks don't move out of state, or some other things may occur. And the legislature, that's exactly why the legislature does not dissolve itself at the end of the last pre-scheduled floor period.
Where is the law that tells us that you can call this extraordinary session? And if you wanted such a law, why can't the legislature pass one?
It just makes no sense to me that a extraordinary session is a regular session.
Don't you find it extraordinary that nobody has raised this issue before this court in over four decades? The legislature shall meet at such time as provided by law, which both parties agree means statute. So doesn't that mean that the legislature can determine for itself when it meets?
The legislature is being very fast and loose with the words of the statute, the words of the Constitution, the words of this court. Mr. Saitlin said earlier that Damon, this court's decision in 1936, absolutely supports his view that the legislature is in perpetual session. And here's what it said. The legislature was not in session on that day being the day that the governor had returned his veto message, it having theretofore temporarily adjourned. There's not a perpetual session.
The Constitution says it shall meet as provided by law, and that allows the legislature and the governor to decide when and how often it's going to meet. And if they decide that they're going to meet for 2 years at a time, if they decide that they're going to delegate that authority to a joint committee to decide when they meet, the statute allows for that.
That cha-ching that was heard in the Capitol this week was a Legislative Fiscal Bureau report saying that between the end of this year and the next 2 years, there's going to be an additional $753 million in general fund tax collections.
Compared to what they expected just in January.
Yes, yes. And let's trace that a bit. Individual income tax collections plus $460 million. Now, this is over a three-year period. Mm-hmm. Corporate up $610 million. What's going to drop? Sales taxes, $280 million. That's not a small number. Cigarette tax, $37 million. Let's point out, JR, that the $610 million increase in corporate taxes is largely a result of the Federal Tax Reform Act, the decisions made by companies to help their bottom line in the 2017 year, and therefore they were paying a higher taxes in 2018 year.
The Department of Revenue puts out every month how collections are going, and I've been seeing that corporate number for a while be like, out of whack is the wrong word to use, but it's just really high.
Yep.
I've asked Bob Lang, the executive director, the director of the Fiscal Bureau, which is the nonpartisan budget arm of the legislature, what's going on. And the whole time he's been saying, we think it's because of the federal tax law, but we're still trying to figure out what's going on. And what's happening is a couple things. One, there are federal tax changes, and I'm not going to try to explain all of them because I'm not a corporate tax attorney, but that made it advantageous to move around when you're paying your taxes federally.
Yes.
A second thing. Our top income tax rate is 7.75 or 7.5. The corporate tax rate, I think, is higher than that. For a lot of businesses, it was better to report your income as a corporation through an LLC, limited liability corporation, through individual shareholders, through their individual income taxes. What's happening now, though, is because of the advantage of the federal tax law,
yep,
they're reorganizing as corporations, not that LLC, and filing their taxes or paying their taxes through the corporate tax rate, state one, not the state individual income tax. That's part of what's happening. So a lot of this is being driven by federal tax changes.
Right, but there were some warnings issued here, both by Revenue Secretary Peter Barca and even Speaker Voss in his statement saying, this is one-time money. You can't use this to pay the light bills, basically what they're saying. Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald and Speaker Voss, generally we're in a position to cut taxes, pay down debt, and make smart investments, including boosting the rainy day fund. The governor, to his credit, said, let's use this one, most of this additional money, $57 million to pay down debt, $18 million more for tech college systems, which we'll get into in a minute, $15 million more for worker training, and then put it in the rainy day fund. But this helps legislators now crafting their budget. They have X amount more to spend.
Yeah, so let's take the big picture. So this is one piece of the puzzle. We already were expecting revenue growth of $1.8 billion.
Upper over
okay.
2 years so of the biennium.
For 1921 versus 1719, a $1.8 billion growth in tax collections. This added about $160 million more to that. The ending balance for the current fiscal year, okay, which we build off the next budget, that ending balance is growing now to $900-some million.
I knew it was more than $900 million.
So now you take 1.8 plus 161 plus 900 plus, you get to just shy of and there are a couple other changes, you know, just shy of $2.9 billion to spend in this next two-year period compared to what we budgeted for the current two-year period.
Right.
That's a lot of money.
So they have more money for K-12 health care. K-12 school aids and health care. Because remember, the governor's health care budget was held together by Medicaid expansion, which isn't going to happen. So it was good news, but there was, with this caveat, it's one-time money in terms of corporate uppers.
A piece of it, yes. So a piece of one. And what we mean by one-time money is that we're not expecting this growth to repeat itself year after year. I mean, individual income taxes, yes, when we hit a recession, they're going to go down. But typically, you know, as the economy grows, we see growth. So that's not one-time money. But the corporate piece is because of this movement.
Yeah.
Of movement of money around to try and pay taxes in an advantageous way. The thing is, you can use it for one-time expenses. So, for example, I get the impression the budget, Republicans figured out a lot of the roadmap where they want to go, except for transportation. There still is a deep divide about whether you're going to borrow more, whether you're going to raise a gas tax or fund another revenue upper. You can use one-time money to pay for one-time road projects.
But not reoccurring.
You can also use one-time money to pay for building projects in Governor Evers' capital budget, which would borrow almost $2 billion, right? So we have the operating budget, which covers Medicaid, schools, government. We have the capital budget, which is all buildings. You could, rather than borrowing that money,
that's true.
You could pay for vertical projects, we call them.
Right.
So there are things like that you could do. I mean, we both remember there was a one-time use of money for a tax rebate.
Yes.
About 19 years ago.
Tommy and Ellis and Jalk wired that.
Way yep. back when.
Yep.
So there are ways to use this money. I know they're all talking about the rainy day fund and putting it aside, but what I want to know is when push comes to shove, do you want to do something for the taxpayer or for a project or to ease this crunch or keep putting money in the bank? You know, for what is going to be, there will be a recession. It's going to happen sometime. At what point, I just don't know.
And now let's look at some of the joint finance decisions they made this week. The governor wanted $18 million in his original budget and then $18 million more for tech colleges. They're giving tech colleges $25 million more, which, by the way, is a 30% increase. Mm-hmm. Their budget right now is $18.5 million in GPR. Then they're generally going along with two major provisions of the governor on clean water, $13.5 million to borrow to help local governments plan and build wastewater, $3.5 million to borrow for low interest loans for new public drinking water systems. And they're giving $12.5 million more for worker training, including $2 million for Marinette Marine, which happens to be in the district of
John Nygren, co-chair of the finance committee.
Now
that was an earmark that Evers put in the budget to help.
Thank you for clarifying that.
Help that shipbuilder because they're trying to attract larger contract or larger projects.
Yes.
The theme in Joint Finance Thursday was they're going to do some of what Evers wants, but not as much. So, and they're also saying Democrats were like, you should do all of what Evers wants for tech colleges. Do all $36 million. They're like, well, wait a second. If it's such a priority, how can we only propose $18 million to start? Now that, in their words, it's convenient, he wants the full 36, which was the full funding request from the tech college system. Was that kind of a boost? Workforce development, He wanted $15 million more on top of what he originally proposed. They went to 12.5. So, again, these are areas where they agree, but the big things are to come when it comes to joint finance.
Yeah, and the Republicans of finance are writing down the Evers higher budget.
So requests. They knocked out positions that Evers wanted to
and
do.
And they didn't go along with $40 million in borrowing to rebuild laterals.
That was knocked out last week.
That was knocked out, and Democrats tried to bring it back this week. No luck. But let's listen to a minute of the debate by the Joint Finance Committee, Representative Rohrkast and Representative Taylor.
It's just amazing to me that there's these arguments of failure in the last 8 years when the reality of 2.8% unemployment, a recent revenue increase of over $700 million on top of a revenue increase in this budget of over
$1.8 billion.
So that's almost $2.5 billion of additional revenue that are coming into the state that could be used to save when there is a recession, which there will be eventually. We could pay down debt or we could look to tax reductions. So those are three things that we could look at with that. But no, we've got to spend well beyond our means. We have to go well beyond a balanced budget and create a huge structural deficit.
Why is our private sector growth rate sluggish when compared to the national growth rate? Why is that? Why is our neighboring state of Minnesota doing so much better when it comes to wages, when it comes to private sector job growth? In every single economic indicator, because they made investments that you refuse to make. You're too busy worrying about the next tax break for the millionaire.
The assembly in session on Wednesday, and it passed for the four abortion tightening bills that we talked about last week. Let's not spend a lot of time on them, although they all passed with just Republican votes. But they're still important, so we'll just quickly summarize them. Providers must do all they can to help a fetus survive if born alive. That's the heartbeat bill. Ban abortions on the basis of race, gender, or other factors. Require physicians to tell women considering taking an abortion-inducing drug the process could be reversed. And providers who perform abortions would be ineligible for Medicaid reimbursements with some exceptions. These go to the Senate. Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald, we expect to take them in June. And I'm using the term Governor Evers may veto. Is that too imprecise? Oh, likely to veto?
He's going to veto all four of these bills. He's made that fairly clear. Especially the first bill, the quote-unquote born alive bill. He said it's not necessary, that it's already in state law. There are protections there. So he's going to veto that bill.
Okay. And then Speaker Voss at his pre-session press conference was asked about some of these tougher bills that other states are passing.
6 weeks, a ban after 6 weeks in Georgia, I believe, is one of them.
Right. And he said,
Alabama.
I'm paraphrasing now, but he said, do I believe that the minute there's a heartbeat, that's a life? You bet I do. Okay.
Don't expect to see those come through anytime soon. Evers would veto those if they did. This is about ginning up the base for 2020. It also could put some Democratic lawmakers in a difficult spot. But Republicans have seen their base reawaken. These are things that are important to them. I mean, you would wonder, you had a Republican governor for 8 years. Why don't you do these bills then? Why can you knock them out then? Why now? And they know they're not going to become law, but they're also, again, important for the base, and they send a message about where they are as a party.
Well, there's a national contest taking place in legislatures, Missouri, Alabama. Who will craft the bill that ends up before the Supreme Court with the goal of overturning Roe versus Wade, that 1973 opinion? Let's listen to just a few seconds of the debate on the abortion bill in the Assembly this Wednesday, please.
You want to be like Alabama, Mr. Speaker? You really want to be like Alabama? Alabama ranks 44th in child mortality. 49th, they rank 49th in infant mortality. 26% of its children live in poverty. You want to be like Alabama?
1,500 abortions are taking place today. This year in the U.S., 348,000 babies will be aborted. Since 1980, 1.5 billion babies have been aborted. 15 million worldwide this year. It's infanticide.
In a press conference yesterday, you guys were there, Attorney General Josh Call and the Governor Evers announced a lawsuit filed against Purdue Pharma, mm-hmm. one of the major manufacturers of OxyContin. I'll tell you what, let's go hear about the Attorney General and the governor talking about that suit before we talk a little bit more about it. Please.
The state of Wisconsin has filed suit against two Purdue Pharma entities, Purdue Pharma LP and Purdue Pharma Inc., as well as Richard S. Sackler. We allege that the opioid epidemic is in part attributable to the deceptive marketing practices of Purdue Pharma, which Richard Sackler played a significant role in directing and overseeing. We allege that the risks of opioid addiction, the risks of overdose, were downplayed, and that the benefits of opioids were overstated in an effort to change the culture regarding the prescription of opioids.
The people we're trying to get justice for here today were just trying to get the medication they needed and to get the health care they needed without increased risk for addiction, abuse, or tolerance. And it's time for Purdue and companies like Purdue across the world to be held accountable to the people who've suffered at the hands of these decisions and dishonesty.
Let's just take a look at some of the what is alleged in the lawsuit filed by our Department of Justice quickly, JR. The rate of babies born addicted to opioids and other addictive drugs in Wisconsin quadrupled between 2006 and 2015. Between 1999 and 2015, the volume of prescription opioids per capita in Wisconsin rose 425%. Between 1999 and 2015, Wisconsin has lost 45,200 workers due to opioids, costing our state economy about $37 million. We joined four other states who filed mm-hmm. suit, and I think now there's a total of 45 states who have filed suit against Purdue Pharma. We're not likely to see any recovery of any funds anytime soon?
Interesting to watch. Interesting note, too, that former Attorney General Brad Schimmel declined to join a lawsuit like this. He's in a discovery right. effort instead.
With other states, yes.
But now we have Josh Call, Democrat, who's replaced him and has filed suit. Also, John Nygren, who is co-chair of the Finance Committee, also is basically the point person legislature for when it comes to opioid addictions and legislation to address that.
Yes.
Said he was going to open this lawsuit if it's about holding people accountable for bad actions. He's interested in it.
Yeah, that's a fascinating thing to watch. So you and I are be heading to Oshkosh here mm-hmm. Today. The Republican State Convention tomorrow, so let's preview it a little bit. I'll tell you what I'm looking for, but why don't you go first? What do you look for?
We're going to hear a presentation about the postmortem that the party did. We saw the overview on
Monday. You wrote about the
Monday.
Report.
Andrew Hitt's the new party chair. He gave us a preview of three weeks ago, basically, that the party became too reliant upon advertising and consultants at the expense of the grassroots, i.e. the county parties, the congressional parties, the people who man the phone banks, who knock on doors, who stuff envelopes and put up yard signs. They need to reconnect and energize those folks. The full report we saw on Monday talked about basically how the party became an arm of the Walker campaign mm-hmm. and spent money unwisely. Wasn't really kind of tight with his controls. And
sold
so
out financially to try to reelect Governor Walker, yep. right? Sold its financial soul.
Also, there were consultants who people weren't sure what they were doing, though they were getting paid pretty well to be there. This party's trying to refocus and is using the Brian Hagedorn win for Supreme Court as a rallying cry of, here's our moment where the grassroots kind of rose up to win a race. We can build off of this. They're trying to dust themselves off and look forward. So it'll be interesting to see how the activists, people who are going to give up a weekend in May to go sit in a room and listen to speeches, how they react to that presentation.
Do you consider Senator Johnson the unofficial head of the party Speaker Voss because he's taken such a high profile?
Ron Johnson is the only statewide official. That's not to diminish Robin Voss or Scott Fitzgerald, their role, but Ron Johnson is the only statewide official we have who's a Republican right now. So in some ways, he is a leader, but it's different for a party when you don't have the governor. The governor, when he is in office, he is the de facto head of the state party. That's just the way it works. Mm-hmm. So Tony Evers is the de facto head of the Democratic Party. He's the most high-profile, every-day-in-the-news kind of person. When you're in Congress or U.S. Senate, you're not as covered as much because you're out in Washington, D.C. It's just the way it is anymore with the resources we have in Wisconsin media. Ron Johnson is definitely one of the faces of the party, But HIT has an interesting role to play as being now this kind of grow into this the fate, like Mike Tate for Democrats when Scott Walker was governor. He had a become the face of the party in some ways, so it's a little bit different.
Right. And Wisconsin and I will be broadcasting the GOP convention from Oshkosh Live. I've got interviews set up with Senator Johnson and Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald, Congressman Grothman, hoping to also interview Representative Voss and other members of our congressional delegation. And there'll be in Oshkosh about 600 people. You and I will be there. We can talk about it next week.
Yep. We will be blogging it from start to finish.
Real quickly, last Saturday was the deadline for Democrats who want to be elected chairman to file. So it's timely that we talk about the two slates that emerged just quickly. Representative David Bowen is running with you're going to have to help me understand the slate concept, but running with Sauk County Democratic Party Chair Tammy Wood and UW-Madison student Alicia Lorda for second vice chair, and MoveOn.org senior advisor Ben Wickler is paired up with a Milwaukee County supervisor, Felicia Martin, and former state Senate candidate Lee Snodgrass. Slates, meaningful?
So Democratic Party rules in Wisconsin require if you have a male running for chair, you have to have a female for first vice chair, and vice versa. So Martha Lanning, the current chair, her first vice chair is David Bowen.
David Bowen, Representative Bowen.
Male. In looking at this race, the perception has been that Ben Wickler is somebody who has got this kind of tapped into a little bit of the grassroots seat. He has this national experience working for MoveOn.org with organizing, but he hasn't been in Wisconsin until recently. You know, he's a Wisconsin native, but he went off to Washington, D.C., moved back, I think, last year. He wasn't here for the fights over Act 10 or those kinds of things. So he's been trying to prove himself with the party activists that I've been here, I'm ready to take on this fight. For David Bowen, he has been here. He's from Milwaukee. It's a party that's diversifying. He's an African-American male running against a Caucasian male. So there's that dynamic about, you know, the party looks different than what it did 20 years ago. At the same time, there are questions for Bowen about can he fundraise, because that's a huge part of being chair. I mean, you're a message person and a fundraising person. And go back to Andrew Hitt, he's got to raise money without a governor in office. Whoever becomes chair of the Democratic Party has that advantage of Governor Evers, but you still have to be a fundraiser and a message person. So that's kind of the challenge for Bowen, is to prove his chops as a fundraiser. He, for example, was the only superdelegate to back Bernie Sanders in 2016.
Yes.
Got a flood of cash because of that, but hasn't really capitalized upon that. So that's, you know, something he'll have to show. Again, they both have answers to questions to answer before they this race.
And just a programming note, they'll be answering that questions. I've got scheduled interviews with both Mr. Wickler and Representative Bowen next week, in which I'm going to ask him, why should you be elected chair at the party convention June 1 and 2? No stock picks this week because we're at the convention.
Yep.
Okay, let's close the program this week by noting how Justice Shirley Abramson was honored by the court, standing ovation. Let's go through first woman on the court, first woman judge, 1976, longest serving chief justice, longest serving justice in Wisconsin history. And last, yesterday, she heard her final oral argument. And Shirley, we wish you well. And this was a scene as they honored Justice Abramson yesterday in the Supreme Court chamber.
This is our last oral argument for the term. And before we all leave, I would like you all to join me in thanking Justice Shirley Abramson, who has provided services to the state of Wisconsin since 1976 on this court.
I remember reading a few years ago a two-volume encyclopedia entitled The 100 Greatest Judges in all of U.S. history. And at the top of that list is Shirley Abramson, listed among the top 100 jurists of all U.S. history. I know that for many years she has said to me that when she sits here, she's standing up for the people of Wisconsin.
Quick look at next week. Joint Finance will meet, and they will pass state aid for K-12 public schools, one of the big-ticket items.
Thursday.
At least it's on their agenda.
So, to me, that's one of the positions or issues that shapes the rest of the budget
debate. It is.
Because for a lot of these things,
that
Republicans,
healthcare, transportation,
it's picking a number, right? We got corrections on Tuesday. Thursday's all about K-12. Once you knock out corrections, K-12, university, Medicaid, those are big drivers of the budget.
You've spent more than $10 billion in GPR funds.
That K-12 number, remember, Evers wanted $1.4 billion in
additional money, including $600 million for special ed.
For public K-12 education. Yep. There was more money for private choice programs. What number are you going to pick? What number they pick then drives a lot of what's left to do with university system, right? So our tech colleges get a boost, but not as much as they wanted. UW, we'll see what they get. Medicaid, my impression is Republicans want to put more money. They're not going to do the expansion that Evers wants, but they want to put more state money in that attracts federal dollars, which allows them to do things like increase reimbursement rates for hospitals, nursing homes. But how much do you have to do that?
Cost to continue Medicaid, $324 million over the biennium. But I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
And that's Rewind for May 17th. And we're on podcast. Find us on a podcast.